Part 16, Chapter 5. There were people there who would be telling their great-grandchildren that they personally had been present when the Johnny had gone into that cage, and who would gain no small importance and notoriety because of it. Johnny was on Windsplitter again, walking the horse toward the small isolated dome erected to house the Chamco brothers.
"That was not well done,"
said Robert the Fox, close beside Johnny.
"Don't scare these people like that."
He himself had been worried stiff.
"I didn't come over to see the people. I came over to see the Chamcos, and I'm on my way right now."
"You have to think of your public presence,"
said Robert the Fox, gently.
"That frightened them."
This might be Johnny's first day out, and Robert might want it to be a good day for him, but that visit to Turl had been hair-raising.
"You're a symbol now,"
he continued. Johnny turned toward him. He was very fond of Sir Robert, but he couldn't conceive of himself as a symbol.
"I'm just Johnny Goodboy Tyler."
He suddenly laughed in a kindly way.
"That is to say, Mac Tyler."
Any concern Sir Robert had felt melted. What could you do with this laddie? He was glad the day seemed a happy one again to Johnny. The crowd was much more subdued, but it was following. Colonel Ivan had gotten over his fright and had his lance-carrying Cossacks in formation. Biddy MacLeod had successfully swallowed his heart and was leading in the direction Windsplitter seemed to be pointing him. The Argyle in command of the compound sneaked a quick and needed one from a flask and was handing it to his second-in-command. Johnny sized up the separate dome ahead. Well, they had done very well by the Chamco brothers. They had salvaged a dome canopy from some mine shafts not now working. It had been raised on a concrete circle. Its atmosphere lock was one of the better ones, a transparent revolving door to keep the breathe gas in and the air out. There was a separate breathe gas tank and pump. The transparent dome had shades, and they were open now despite the sun's heat. Cyclos didn't seem to care much about heat and cold. Here the Chamcos were busy with plans and suggestions in return for pay that could be paid now in cash, thanks to Kerr's discovery of galactic credits. Johnny knew them from his training days around the mine site. They were top-grade design and planning engineers, graduates of all the accepted Cyclo and company schools. By report, they were extremely cooperative and even polite, as polite as a Cyclo ever could be, which was not much. Their idea of politeness was a one-way flow, at them. They could be seen in there now, working at two big upholstered desks, flanked by drawing boards. There was an intercom of the usual type, so one could stand outside and talk to those inside without going through the lock. But Johnny could not imagine trying to talk technical matters through one of those intercoms. Colonel Ivan must have read his mind. He pushed forward and said in his limited English,
"You going there?"
Then he looked around wildly for a coordinator who spoke Russian. The coordinator interpreted,
"He says that's bulletproof glass in that canopy. He can't cover you with rifles."
Robert the Fox said, somewhat desperately,
"Haven't you been out long enough for your first day?"
"This is what I came over to do,"
said Johnny, rolling off Windsplitter. Doubtfully, Colonel Ivan handed him the knob carry, and at the same time tried to get the interpreter to translate.
"The colonel says not to stand in the airlock,"
said the coordinator.
"To go inside and move over to the right. If you don't, his men can't charge in."
Hobbling toward the atmosphere lock, Johnny heard the crowd behind him saying things like,
"He's going in there too. Doesn't he realize these cyclos?"
And,
"Ah, look at those awful beasts in there."
Johnny didn't like all this impeding of his actions. Being a symbol had its problems. It was an entirely new idea to him that he couldn't move about freely at his own discretion, and that others would have a say in where he was going. He guessed the Chamco brothers usually had their canopy curtains closed, because even though the curtains were now open, they had lights burning. He put on an air mask a pilot had handed him. Johnny hobbled through the atmosphere lock, experiencing a bit of trouble with it. These locks, built for cyclos, were always clumsy for him. Too heavy. Too hard to push. The Chamcos had stopped working and were sitting still, looking at him. They were not in any way hostile, but they didn't greet him.
I came to see what progress you were making in rebuilding the transshipment rig,
said Johnny, using pleasant Cyclo intonations, as pleasant as Cyclo ever was. They didn't say anything. Was the smaller Chamco brother looking a little wary?
If you need any materials or anything, I will be happy to see they are furnished you.
The bigger Chamco brother said,
The whole rig was burned out. The console, everything. Destroyed.
Well, yes,
said Johnny, leaning on his cane in front of the atmosphere lock.
But I'm sure they're just common components. There's miniature rigs in these freighters that are not too dissimilar.
Very difficult,
said the smaller Chamco brother. Were his eyes a little strange, or was it just a Cyclo being a Cyclo?
We ought to rebuild it. We won't know what really happened to Cyclo until we do.
Takes a long time,
said the bigger Chamco. Were his eyes looking a little strange? But then, the amber orbs of a Cyclo always had tiny flames in them.
I've been trying to figure it out,
said Johnny. He looked over to the side, where they had some textbooks. Right on the end was the one he had thrown down this morning.
If you could explain to me...
The smaller Chamco sprang. The bigger Chamco leaped up from his desk and charged. They were roaring. Johnny stumbled backward. The cane was in the road of a draw. He threw it at the nearer Chamco, a weak throw. He was never left-handed. He saw an enormous paw blurring in the air, coming at him. He knelt and did a left-handed draw. Talons raked the side of his face. Johnny fired. The recoil threw him back against the door, and he tried to push into the atmosphere lock. It seemed jammed, frozen. Flat on his back, a boot stamping down to crush his ribs. He fired up from the floor. The boot blurred away. A furry pair of paws were coming at his throat. The roars were berserk. Johnny fired at the paws and then at a huge chest. He punched blast after blast into them, driving them back. Somehow, he got to his knee. The two gigantic bodies were falling back, falling down. Johnny fired again at one and then the other. Both of them were flat on the floor. The smaller Chamco brother was thoroughly stunned. But just beyond him, the bigger one was fighting with a desk drawer. He got it open and pulled out something. It was all happening too fast. Johnny could not see what he had due to the angle of the desk. He moved sideways to get a clearer shot. The bigger Chamco had a small blast gun. But he wasn't trying to aim it at Johnny. He was aiming it at his own head. He was trying to commit suicide. The howling maelstrom of action had passed. Johnny coolly aimed and blew the gun out of the bigger Chamco's hand. It didn't explode. Part of the blast had hit the Cyclo, and he flopped back, knocked out. Damn, not having a right hand and arm. He couldn't at once recover his cane. He hopped sideways and leaned against the canopy wall. Smoke was thick in the room, curling around the breathe gas exhaust vents. He was half deaf from all the roaring and snarling and the blasts of the gun in this confined space. Whew, what was that all about? There they lay, but why the attack? The atmosphere lock door revolved, and Colonel Yvonne and a sentry burst through.
Don't fire those rifles!
Warned Johnny.
This is breathe gas, and radiation will blow us to bits! Get some shackles!
We couldn't find air masks!
Howled the guard, hysterical. Then he tore out to find shackles. Colonel Yvonne adjusted his own air mask a hitch to better look at the two Cyclos sprawled on the floor. They looked like they were out, but Johnny still had a blast gun on them. He gestured at the breathe masks of the Cyclos, which were hanging on a coat tree. Colonel Ivan grabbed them and put them on the unconscious Chamcos. Johnny gestured at the breathe gas circulator controls, and Colonel Ivan went to them and shut them off. And then, with a lot of battering with huge strength, he got the atmosphere lock folded back on itself, flooding air into the place. Sentries finally could rush in, chains and shackles rattling and clanging, and get them onto the Chamcos. Johnny hobbled outside. Only then did he realize the crowd had been there and had seen all this through the canopy glass. Some were pointing at his face, and he realized for the first time that he was bleeding. He hobbled to Windsplitter and mounted. The crowd was talking to one another. Guards were trying to work.
Why did he attack those cyclos?
They attacked him.
Why did they fight?
Look out, here comes a flatbed and forklift. Please stand aside.
I don't blame Johnny for shooting cyclos.
Can we have some help here with these bodies?
Why did they let him go in then? How come they attacked him?
I have heard that these cyclos...
But I saw him. He was being very pleasant. And they charged him. Why would they do that?
Johnny didn't have a bandana or a scrap of buckskin to staunch the blood dropping down on his hunting shirt. Some mechanic handed him a wad of waste, and he held it to his cheek.
They were supposed to be tamed cyclos. Why did they attack him?
More crowd talk. Johnny surely wished he knew. What had he said? He had a sudden thought. He called out,
"Did anybody get a recording of that? The conversation must have been coming through the intercom."
Well, there had been about 15 picto recorders using up discs ever since he had stepped off the plane. And Argyle rushed up, waving one.
"Can somebody copy that for me? I have to know what was said that made them do it."
Oh, yes, sir, right away. And they had copies of it before he hoisted himself off Windsplitter and into the plane. He was going to study these.
"Wave,"
said Robert the Fox. Johnny waved. The crowd was looking at him, some faces quite white, even a black face a bit gray.
"Please stand back!"
from the guards.
"Clear the field, please!"
Back at the base, that night, just after dinner, Colonel Ivan got a coordinator in. The coordinator said,
"He wants me to tell you that you live too dangerously."
There might have been more, but Johnny cut him off.
"Tell him, perhaps at heart, I'm just a Cossack."
The Russians laughed about that, repeating it for days and days thereafter. It had been a rather energetic first day out. There was a repercussion. 3 days later, he received a confidential written message from the Council. He did not think much about it at the time, not being unduly sensitive. Later, he would look back on it as a turning point and criticize himself for not realizing how ominous it was. The message was very correct, very polite, passed by a slim majority. It was brief. By council resolution, in the interest of his personal safety and to curtail any embarrassment, realizing his value to the state, it is decreed that Johnny Goodboy Tyler not again visit the compound located in this place until such prohibition is formally rescinded by constituted authority. Duly passed on voice vote and certified as legal. Oscar Kammerman, Chief of the Tribe of British Columbia, Secretary to the Council. Johnny read it, shrugged, and tossed it in the wastebasket.